You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
You see the familiar red mailing envelopes all the time. Movies from Netflix. And last month, the online rental company delivered its billionth DVD to one of its 6.3 million subscribers. Joining me to look at how Netflix became such a popular service is Andreas Kluth. He's a technology correspondent for The Economist, and I'm very pleased to welcome him to this month's installment of Backstory. Hello.
Yeah, hello. Thanks for having me.
For our listeners who don't use Netflix, can you briefly describe how it works?
It works wonderfully simple. That's the success to that's the secret to its success. Is you go to a website, Netflix.com, and you can subscribe right there by putting in your credit card number. You then at the beginning they don't know how to recommend movies to you. You just browse for movies. You click. With one click, they get added into what's called your queue, which is like a list, or for those people who use iTunes, it's like a playlist. It's essentially, you know, a queue of films that will be sent to you. And then that's what happens. Netflix puts them in a little red envelope, puts them into the U.S. Postal Service, and they show up in your mailbox, usually in, they say, 90% of cases within 1 or 2 days.
Well, since it only takes a few days, do you have any idea of how many distribution centers they have?
They have 42 shipping centers. That's the latest number they've made available. Hmm. And so they try to spread those shipping centers around the country so that it's near the population centers and so that they can achieve these rates. So some people will be further away from these shipping centers and will get it with some more delay than others. But most people will, they say most people get it within 1 or 2 days. And I live in Berkeley, which is actually quite close to the headquarters of Netflix. I do usually get them within 2 days.
Does each center carry every one of the 75,000 titles that Netflix says it has?
That I don't know, but they will have a very probably patented and proprietary system, a logistical system, to make sure that the 75,000 titles that they carry in total, which is a large number, by the way, will be available to all the shipping centers very quickly. So even if a particular envelope wouldn't be there on a particular day, it would arrive there very quickly.
Now, why doesn't Netflix have late fees or charge for losing or damaging discs?
Well, that's the sort of secret behind why the founder, Reed Hastings, did this, around the turn of the decade. I think he had a very unpleasant experience, as most Americans do, with blockbusters and late fees, and he decided that wasn't necessary, that actually made no sense. There was no logical reason to charge people late fees, that was really a bricks-and-mortar limitation from a previous century. So he got rid of that. I mean,
he started off by charging per film and charging late fees, and then somewhere down the line they changed the policies.
I'm sorry, in Netflix?
Yeah, yes, the first year, as far as I understand.
Yeah, I mean, the Netflix now works as an all-you-can-eat buffet mm-hmm. model. And you get your next film in your queue as soon as you mail back to Netflix the one you've just watched. And so that you pay per how many films you have at any given moment in your home.
Mm-hmm.
And that reduces the need for them to charge late fees. I mean, late fees, it makes no sense in this model.
According to Netflix website, customers report renting more movies now that they're members of Netflix than they did when they belonged to the traditional video store.
Yes, and that makes very good sense to me. That's certainly the case in my, you know, for me, because I spoke to Reed Hastings at length about this issue. He says, this is the most interesting thing I got from him in this, that Netflix is not in the demand fulfillment business. In other words, it's not actually about the technology of how they ship the DVDs through the mail. Instead, it's about the demand creation business. What Netflix tries to do, as all the other, you know, online video sites now do, is to is to recommend things to you. The longer you use Netflix, the better the recommendations get, so that you become interested in films that you wouldn't have otherwise known about, or you might not have remembered to be interested in.
In the way that Amazon
In
the way that Amazon recommends certain books to you once they see certain buying patterns.
Correct. But it's all, and so once you realize that that's the key to Netflix's success, and also to its the rivals that are now coming up, it all becomes about how good are these recommendations. And that, according to Reed Hastings, is actually more important than any of the physical medium in which the film shows up in your house, whether it's as a download or as a videotape or as a DVD.
But how is that any different from going to the local video store and speaking to someone there who you know is knowledgeable about movies? This is really hurting video stores, isn't it?
It's really hurting video stores. But, you know, you also asked how is it different, and it's hugely different if you think about it. First of all, in a physical store, similar to a bookstore, they will have a comparatively tiny number of titles, whereas Netflix has, by definition, all 75,000 titles that exist available. And there's a concept called the long tail you might have heard of. It's a statistical concept. Is that actually most people like, or you know, their preferences are for what most other people would consider niche content, films that are relatively obscure, but that are very, you know, that you happen to like. Physical stores can only carry the equivalent of blockbusters. They must carry, because they don't have the space, so they must try to guess what the most popular titles are, all the more niche titles they can't carry. So if you go to a physical store, you have a comparatively tiny selection to begin with. If you then go to the next step, as you suggested, and ask someone there, even if they kind of know your taste, well, they can help. But it'll still be relatively inefficient compared to what Netflix knows about you once you've rated thousands of movies, and even more inefficient once you're on Netflix and you share your tastes with your friends and family.
So there really are 75,000 films available on DVD, and they carry every one of them?
Yes, and they say, and this is an interesting statistic, that in any given three-month period, 95% of those 75,000 titles are actually being rented out. And just to give you a comparison, every year Hollywood adds about 400 to 500 new films. So that's a small number. So this 95% rental figure of the 75,000 titles shows you that most people do use Netflix to watch old films, obscure films, foreign films, films that wouldn't necessarily be in the, you know, top rack at the Blockbuster physical store.
I'd like to see what the 5% that aren't being rented out are.
Possibly there's a good reason for those not being out.
But that might be an interesting study. Several Netflix customers have complained that Netflix actually does limit the number of DVDs that you can rent from them by delaying shipment.
Yes.
So
that was a controversy that came through the blogosphere when some ticked off customers complained about that, and I believe they've changed that policy, although in my personal observation, there is a slowdown when I watch and return many films in a row compared to when I just watch and return a few films in a given month. And now the way to understand that is the economics of Netflix is, as I said, an all-you-can-eat buffet model. And in any all-you-can-eat buffet, even in the food example analogy, it's sort of based on that people don't all at the same time eat to their complete maximum. So Netflix has, at least in the past, slowed you down with their computer algorithms a little bit. So if you're returning one film every day, then maybe for a while, you would be slowed down, and you would get your film in 2 or 3 days instead of 1 day. Now, I believe because they got such bad publicity, I recently heard Reed Hastings, the founder and the boss, say that they no longer do this. I have yet to observe that in my personal usage of it.
My guest is Andreas Kluth, who's a technology correspondent for The Economist. We're talking about Netflix here on today's Backstory. Well, so this is a mix of growing technology, because you have these algorithms that might predict the kind of film you'd be interested in based on your taste. But largely, this is just an old-fashioned mail order house. We're talking about a company that sends out 1.5 million discs every day, so the post office must be thrilled. But it's nothing like downloading from a computer and being all that web savvy.
That's correct. And that's actually going to be the biggest question mark over Netflix from here on forward. They've done phenomenally well by, if you will, disrupting the previous rental model, which was physical stores, blockbusters, late fees. And so far, you know, and Reed Hastings likes to say that the DVD medium, which costs maybe $1, it costs maybe $1 to produce a DVD, that there's no obvious setback to it. So there is nothing wrong with the demand fulfillment medium. So he's cracked that so far. However, now, as we're in this, you know, you may have heard the phrase Web 2.0, for the past year, you know, the biggest hit has been YouTube, and now there's things like BitTorrent and Juiced, and of course iTunes sells films, and
Amazon is down.
Amazon and Walmart. So mm-hmm. Suddenly, everybody and their brother is starting to offer videos and film for download, and that is clearly the future. Within one decade, you know, to just give a generous and conservative estimate, we'll all be downloading or streaming or sharing films online. And so the physical medium, that is the DVD, will probably gradually disappear, although probably quite slowly. How Netflix responds to that world is going to be very important, because it suddenly does face these entirely new competitors who, the physical late fees store is now, you know, out of the picture, basically. But these other companies are coming along and also are offering innovative new ways of watching videos online and of sharing and of recommending and of demand creation and all these other great things. And it's quite confusing at the moment. There's various different types of this online consumption that are now being pioneered.
Well, I wonder what the movie studios think of these movie downloads, because it's DVDs are a lot easier to control, aren't they?
Yes, and in fact, the DVDs are familiar to Hollywood, because Hollywood has, for the past century that it has existed, worked in this windowing model, what they call. So, you know, there's a certain time window when films are only in the cinema, and then another time window when they get to DVD, and then another time video when they get to, let's say, on-demand video, and then cable television, and eventually terrestrial television, and so forth. These rights, that's what this is about, these legal rights and that are associated with the windowing of Hollywood, are having to be completely renegotiated in the online world. And this gets very obscure and complicated and difficult. And, you know, just you mentioned the word downloading several times. Just to make it a bit more confusing, downloading is just one of several ways by which we can consume films in this new online world. There's and the others are called streaming or peer-to-peer sharing, and they each have, believe it or not, different legal rights and complications associated with them.
Now, windowing explains why certain films are available in certain areas before they are in others. Unless you know how to get films from Hong Kong, you're going to have to wait a while until those films are released here. European films are also released at different times, and so we have all these different regions for DVDs as a way of controlling just who sees what when?
Yes, although the windowing system applies more, I mean, it does apply to regions of the world to some extent, but it applies more pertinently to different media. So, you know, the big screen that you pay a ticket to go into versus your television screen versus, you know, DVD and so forth.
What about yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. No, so windowing in the very long run will adjust. But these things take time because the existing legal contracts, take many years to expire in many cases. And by the way, this is common to all media, not just the film industry, but you've probably been aware of the music industry and the dire straits it has been in since the early Napster and the way it's having to readjust all its, notions about copyright and distribution agreements with things like iTunes and so forth. So there's a lot of change going on in all the media, and film is actually a relatively late one to be affected by the digital revolution, but it now is being affected and will have to adjust.
The Wall Street Journal reports today that Blockbuster CEO John Antioco will be stepping down by the end of the year. Now, Blockbuster has also created a mailing service in order to be competitive with Netflix. Is theirs less successful?
Well, Blockbuster, you would think, would have an advantage when they do this because they can combine whatever benefits there are to the physical stores, and there are some. Sometimes it may be convenient to, drive down and return it and to take one away with you, with the advantages of online demand creation that we discussed. So you can go to the website, get things recommended to you, queue them up, but every once in a while when you're in a hurry or you want to have immediate gratification, you could go to the physical store, return it, and walk out with another DVD right then and there. But so far, it's true that Blockbuster hasn't really made any dent into Netflix at all. And the same, by the way, can be said for Walmart. There was great concern quite a while ago about when Walmart entered Netflix business and Netflix stock briefly went down and so forth. But Netflix has so far prevailed against both of these attacks because Netflix is the one, a bit like Google and web search, is the name that's now associated with that and arguably is, for the time being, still better than these other two, though not some of the other rivals that exist, in demand creation. So people seem to like the experience. It's very good to deal with Netflix. They have no identifiable issue, problem, complaint about using it. So Netflix is so far doing great, and Blockbuster is not by comparison.
Is Netflix just limited to the United States?
For the time being, it is. I think there may be a little bit going on in Canada, but the reason is the reliance in the current incarnation of Netflix on the U.S. postal system. So that there is a bit of a bottleneck. In a pure download world, this would be a global business, although there's the complication of national copyright laws. But for the time being, Netflix is, stuck with the U.S. postal system. Every country has its own postal system, and it would have to reach entirely new agreements with, the postal systems of other countries. It has so far not done that. That doesn't mean it cannot do that in the future, and it certainly doesn't mean that once we get to the streaming model, which Netflix is also pioneering, by the way, we cannot make this a global business. But so far, it has not happened.
My great thanks to you for talking with us today on Backstory. Andreas Kluth, Kluth, a technology correspondent for The Economist.
Thank you very much for having me.